Welcome to Manager Tools. This is Sarah.
And I'm Mark.
And today's cast, One-on-Ones Updated, Part 3 of 3.
The questions this cast answers are, how do I get to know my team? How do I get my team to do their jobs? What should I discuss in a one-on-one?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Manager Tools is recognized by the Project Management Institute as a certified CPU provider. Any attendees of our organizational training events earn credits toward their project management recertification. In a single day, you can train your group while at the same time getting them their necessary CPU credits. For more information, contact Maggie by emailing us at customerservice@manager-tools.com for more details.
Okay, so next on our agenda is where to have your one-on-ones. And this is happening now in the time of post-pandemic and Zoom and Teams and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so our recommendation, hold your one-on-ones, listen carefully now, not in public, but not necessarily in private. Public and private are sort of funny. People think of them as opposites, but they're not. The opposite of public is not private. There's a multitude of in-between spaces, which are perfectly suitable for one-on-ones. We trained 900 managers at SpaceX a number of years ago, all the managers at SpaceX in all of their U.S. locations. And the vast majority of managers at the Hawthorne facility, where SpaceX builds its rockets in Los Angeles, they do their one-on-ones in the mezzanine, which is the lunchroom. And they do them not during the lunch hour, because during the lunch hour, the mezzanine is full. And by the way, there's not much room on the production floor because they have a rocket on the production floor. It takes up an awful lot of room. But they just walk upstairs to the mezzanine and they find two seats sitting across from one another at one of the picnic tables up there. And they do the one-on-one up there during normal business hours. If you walk up there at any given time at SpaceX right now, you will see 30, 40, 50 pairs of managers and directs all spread out, you know, with some distance between them. So you're not sitting next to someone trying to crosstalk on their one-on-one. And it goes off just fine. Now, is that space public or private? Well, it is a public space, but they're having a private meeting because there's nobody sitting right around them. You don't have to be in an office with your door shut and the shades drawn. Frankly, shutting your door may be a negative for some people. Most of the time, you're not going to be talking about private or personal stuff. You're going to be talking about work, and you just don't need that kind of privacy. In fact, directs tell us, I don't want or need privacy. What I want is attention. I actually told a manager once, I don't care, do them in public and stay off your phone. If you give that kind of attention, it doesn't matter that people are walking by you. It doesn't matter that people are overhearing snippets of the conversation. Now look, if you develop a stronger relationship with your direct and they feel like there are times when they can unburden themselves to you about personal things or stuff that might be considered private, they may want to share those things with you in private. And they will be comfortable asking you for a different space for that one-on-one that week. You don't have to schedule a different space every week.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. And I don't know if this needs saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. If you actually have an office, like walls and a door and your name's hung outside, then obviously use your office.
Sure. Yeah.
Be prepared for your directs to say, am I in trouble? The first couple of times when they're coming in, right?
But Sarah, we ought to mention though that one of our other podcasts in this re-release of the Trinity, this modernization and updating of the Trinity guidance, is we're going to talk about briefing your team before you do one-on-ones. So you're not just going to start doing one-on-ones. There's a process you go through, sending out an email, giving them a briefing, sharing with them what you're doing and why you're doing it. And a lot of the things you probably, if you're coming to us for the first time and listen to this us for the first time, you probably have a lot of questions. Well, what about this? What about this? What about this? Believe me, the things you can make up in your head are not going to happen when you take time to let them know what you're doing. They know that everyone's going through it, and you're going to brief them. You're going to walk them through. You can, if you're a licensee of our work, you can print out these show notes and provide them to them so they can read through and come up with questions. The kind of questions you're going to get are not going to be confrontational at all. They're not going to be worried, and they won't be worried that you're having him in the office. If you tell him, look, I'm doing it in my office because it's convenient. There's 10 of you. I'll leave the door open. I'm not trying to bring you into my office to give you a hard time at all. I don't want my office to be a place where it's uncomfortable. And if we need to do it in a common area, you could do it outside in nice weather, almost anywhere.
Yeah, the guidance that Mark's talking about is called Rolling Out the Trinity. For those of you that are looking for the name of the cast, Rolling Out the Trinity is where we talk about that. Now, folks know, if they don't ask, they might still be thinking about it. If you've only ever invited them to your office for negative reasons, that'll have an impact on the speed with which the relationship develops.
Yep.
If you're doing your one-on-ones there and it's normally a place, your office, that's meant for bad things, it's going to take a while. For those of you that do work in a cubicle, so long as your cubicle is about 6 foot wide, 6 foot deep, you can use that space. You're going to have to scoot your chair around.
We measured it, by the way. 6 feet was about the right, you know, it's a little tight, right? But it's not too constraining. Directs don't mind.
Actually, we have data a little bit around interviews in cubicles as well.
Yeah.
Which is really surprising. People like being interviewed in cubicles. It's less confrontational, maybe is the word. Maybe it's more comfortable, a little bit less, I'm going to say formal, generally. And you could absolutely do it in that space. You're going to have to lower your voices and you're totally going to have to scoot your chair around, but you could make it work. You'll have to be more focused on ignoring interruptions if you're in a cubicle environment, since the other people that are around you are probably comfortable interrupting you in that environment. And if they see you just talking to somebody in your cubicle, they may not realize, oh, actually, this is kind of a meeting. So make sure your backs are maybe turned to where other people can see you. If you hear your name, ignore it and don't immediately respond, yeah, sure, what's up? And no, at a very high level, don't allow somebody else to interrupt the most important meetings that you have with your directs all week. You don't know if this person's concern is important or not, but 95% of the time, you should know it is less important than the meeting you're in. So you'll know if it's actually a the building is on fire moment, or if your direct is more important than what this distraction likely is.
And we talk about discipline and focus and the idea of multitasking being a big fat lie. And one of the things we tell managers is the person who is trying to interrupt you doesn't cause the interruption. You do. When you stop what you're doing and you turn to them and address their concern. If you want to not be interrupted, when people try to interrupt, ignore them. You will win major points with your directs. I used to hold up my hand. And now, if I'm in a meeting with my boss, I'd probably hold up a hand to one of my directs if they're trying to interrupt me in that meeting. But almost any other meeting I'm in, I might wave a direct in. But in my one-on-ones, I just held up a hand. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Look, also, guys, don't schedule a conference room. Now, we don't make that recommendation because conference rooms are bad spaces to hold one-on-ones in. They're fine, although they're a little big. Although lately, it seems in the modern world that there are a lot less conference rooms than there used to be. Now we have huddle rooms and so on. The reason you don't want to schedule a conference room is because scheduling a conference room adds three entities to the one-on-one, you, your direct, and the conference room. It takes additional steps. There's additional logistics. You could get trumped if you're in a conference room that'll fit 10 and there are not enough conference rooms in your company and you're in a one-on-one with one other person. Somebody more senior than you walks in and says, you got to get out because we need a room. Then there you are. And now you're looking around for a home.
Yeah, exactly. Make it easy on yourself for sure. And in terms of locations, Mark's gone through a bunch. I mean, mezzanine, there's the lunch space. You could go to a Starbucks. You could go for a walk, though it makes it a little bit difficult. We're going to talk about notes in a bit to take notes. But you can choose a table that's far from everywhere else. There might be a greeting area where customers and clients come into your office and there are some chairs and couches. All of those places work.
Yeah, as long as people don't stop. You don't want to have two chairs right by the elevator where people are loitering for a couple of minutes. Go across the street to a coffee shop. Go to a Starbucks. Starbucks are usually so loud that even if it's somebody sitting 5 feet from you, they won't be able to hear a conversation that you're going to be having with them. So yeah.
Exactly. And folks, proximity to the rest of your team, your Agile or Scrum environment, or conversely, the remoteness of your team, that they work shifts or are in different time zones, can all be overcome. The value you're going to obtain from the meetings will make it well worth the effort to find the right place and time.
Is there ever a case where somebody convinced us that they couldn't do a one-on-one? There are managers who don't want to do them and use the physical space as a reason why they can't. But I've never, ever had anyone convince me that they were physically unable to do it. And nowadays, if somebody's distant, there are so many more remote teams than there were 20 years ago. Zoom works great. It's not as good as face-to-face, but it's 90% as good. And if you had to do something on the phone because Zoom wasn't available, you have bad internet quality or whatever, you can do a phone one-on-one as well. We have separate guidance for Zoom one-on-ones and phone one-on-ones, but 99% of it is the same. Perhaps the only difference is when you go to phone, you're probably only at 80% of the value of the improvement in results and retention. But remember, 80% is not enough reason not to do it because we're comparing it to somebody who doesn't do one-on-ones and gets 0%.
Yeah.
So a phone one-on-one is still good. It's just not as good as a video one-on-one or face-to-face.
Later this month, we are hosting an EMC and ECC in Minneapolis. May 14th and 15th, we'll be training managers and professionals in downtown Minneapolis. If you want to up your professional skill set, we can teach you how to be a good manager and how to be a better communicator. Come to Minneapolis and let us help you be more successful. May 14th and 15th. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
All right, that takes us to take notes. Despite the rumors that one-on-ones, sometimes we call them O3s, you might see that on our website somewhere, are personal meetings where managers and directs are just there to connect and relate and catch up and chat, they are most certainly not. One-on-ones are business meetings just like all of the other meetings that are happening in our organizations and at work, designed and proven to improve trust, which speeds communication and is the single most correlated datum related to results and retention.
Yeah. Now, because of the purpose of one-on-ones, it is inevitable that managers and directs would take notes during them, the way they would at any other meeting that they attended where information of relevance and value was being discussed, right? And yet, for some reason, the idea persists that this is a catch-up, we're just chatting, we're just holding hands around the campfire, kumbaya. That is not what a one-on-one is. This is a business meeting. And if you've ever seen your boss at a meeting and she takes notes on some things and not on others, imagine she comes to a one-on-one with you and she doesn't take notes. She's saying, this is less important. We're just here to chat. I'm not going to pay any attention to anything you say. We're just, you know, we're shooting the breeze here a little bit.
Exactly. Well, or you can do a thought experiment, a simple thought experiment. Imagine you discovered that most of your directs were attending meetings with other departments without taking a notebook and a pen to take notes with. And in your company, laptops weren't allowed for note-taking in meetings. Am I the only person whose head would explode?
I mean, if one of my directs did that, like, seriously, dude, what? I heard you weren't taking notes. No, I keep it all in my head. I heard you got like 6 deliverables. There's no way you could keep all that in your head. No, I pretty much got it. Yeah, pretty much doesn't count it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So we've got some general note-taking guidance so that individuals can kind of put this into a frame of mind. How are we going to do it? Starting with capture deliverables in a distinct way. Now, folks, deliverables matter. You know that when you go to any other meeting, you're especially aware of anything you're going to be on the hook for. So if nothing else, that's what you write down. You write down your deliverables.
And since deliverables are going to be part of one-on-ones, the same thing works for one-on-ones. You're going to have to take notes about your deliverables. We recommend you have some distinctive way, your own way, doesn't have to be anybody else's way, to capture deliverables. When we say distinctive, we mean that you can immediately see it quickly, every time, at first glance, at any one-on-one form sitting on your desk. Now, you'll notice we're making it clear here, these are handwritten notes.
Exactly. So in terms of one-on-ones, we have on our website, manager-tools.com, in our downloadable forms cabinet, we have got multiple different variations of one-on-one forms you could possibly use. Now, one-on-one forms are not strategy documents. For every manager who's one-on-ones we're familiar with, one-on-ones tend to be very down in the weeds, really detailed, very much about what's happening today, this week. And because one-on-ones are so focused on that small incremental behavior, it would be hard to have this meeting and not have it talk about the tasks and responsibilities that go hand in hand with the day-to-day stuff we're working on.
Yeah. And because one-on-ones are about relationships and therefore trust, trust is huge here. And that means you have to be sure you're going to be able to do what you say you're going to do. And so if you commit to something in a meeting and don't write it down, you can't say, well, I forgot to write it down, right? That'll destroy the trust building you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So if you're taking these handwritten notes, what you could do to, I want to say, make a deliverable stand out or make an item specifically important as you're reviewing your notes is do a circle in any deliverable that your direct has got on your one-on-one form. The way I do it, in fact, is I've got multiple directs. I've got Cassie and Amanda and Maggie. And if there's a deliverable that they owe me, I put, for Amanda, for example, I put the letter A in a circle. Now, A in a circle means Amanda owes me this thing. Now, if it's my deliverable in Amanda's one-on-one, it says S in a circle. Because if it's an S in a circle, it's for Sarah. And I can tell the difference. All deliverables have a letter with a circle around it. And some of them are for my direct and some are for me. And there are even in other people's one-on-one forms and one-on-one notes, I've got circles around other people's names.
Yeah. And the idea is, it's not the circle. It's not the letter. I use a cloud. I draw a cloud around any deliverable for me or anybody else. I can look at that one-on-one note and in a moment, see if I have any deliverables. And by the way, if I've done the deliverable, I slash through it, meaning that one's done.
Me too.
And I can go back through three or four or five weeks in like 5 seconds in my notebook and find which are the undone, undelivered deliverables.
Oh, pro tip. Don't use highlighter. And I say that because I tried it at the beginning. I'm like, you know what would be even better? Like highlighting things. But you can't undo a highlight in a handwritten note. There's no amount of crossing through that takes highlighter away.
The other thing about highlighting for me is, unless you're going to use one of those pens that have both, you have to have two instruments for writing. And if you're doing one in an airport lounge because you're traveling or you're in the back of a car, you're in a cab for 45 minutes going to the airport, having two different utensils that you have to use, it just would drive me crazy.
Didn't even get that far, dude.
Yeah.
Failed immediately.
Yeah.
Immediately. Didn't even get off the ground. It was terrible.
Yeah. Now, capture communications or responsibilities in a different way. Again, distinctive, but somehow differently than a cloud or a circle or whatever. Any notes that require us to engage in any form of communication with anyone. Usually for me, it's an arrow with a person's first name, first initial, like Amanda, like A for Amanda or M for Maggie, a circle around that with an arrow to it saying, I owe that to Maggie or to Sarah or to Amanda or whomever. In a way, these could be considered deliverables, but we and others have found that making the distinction to communications or responsibilities, it's helpful to do that. We've seen a lot of managers put double rectangles around these things that they have to communicate.
Mm-hmm. And then there is capture feedback, but not in detail or necessarily perfectly. The standard for what constitutes documentation is incredibly low. And folks, in an upcoming podcast or a podcast which we've re-released in the past, all about feedback, you're going to hear all about the way we talk about delivering it. You don't need great details for your feedback capture. You just need enough details to spark your memory, to remind you, oh, yes, this is what we talked about. That's plenty.
Yeah. However you choose to do it, it ought to be, again, easily visible when you glance at a one-on-one note. Okay. Remember, you do not need to meet some legal standard. Okay. You don't need to write a memorandum for understanding or a memorandum of record, or you don't need a detailed description of everything that happened in the conversation. I have testified in 7 wrongful termination suits with corporate clients. We won all 7 of them. And the note-taking was very, very simple. The key is your notes must be contemporaneous, meaning made at about the same time as the discussion. So if I were to give positive feedback to Wendy because Career Tools performance improved, I would write an F with a plus next to it, circled. So that was positive feedback. And I would write CTPerf, P-E-R-F, dot, improved. Mm-hmm. If I were going to give positive feedback to Wendy on her communication, I would write F plus W, circled, and then a note about communication. That's all. That's all you need. And you can reconstruct what actually happened from that. You're not going to have to reconstruct something 18 months later. Or if you do, and it's about a wrongful termination, somebody sues you, you'll be given plenty of time to go back through the notes and reconstruct things.
Mm-hmm. And one of the ways I've also found to, going back to our previous point, Mark, the collecting important facts, responsibilities, communications, what have you, feedback in this case, in a way that makes them stand out is I always have with me sticky notes so that I can write my feedback on it. And then my feedback is stuck in my one-on-one book, but you can
right
see,
on the,
oh, yep. there's, yeah, right on the that date. So there's, oh, there's two this week. Oh, there's one this week. Oh, there's none this week. And it's all in there. So I can just
Very
flip
obvious.
Through with my thumb and I can see how many pieces of feedback and I can identify them immediately. They stand out
yep.
from all of the other notes.
Last bit of specific note-taking guidance is if you're going to be doing coaching on someone, and again, we'll have a remastered podcast, an updated podcast for our coaching model coming up here, capture your coaching notes on the back of last week's one-on-one notes. Think about a standard notebook where you write on the right side of the notebook, and the previous week's one-on-one form is the page turned over to your left. Well, the back of that page is blank. And we learned from several very smart managers in our community a number of years ago that rather than mixing your coaching notes in with your normal one-on-one notes and then having to go find the coaching part each week to stay current as you continue to the coaching process over 3, 4, 5, 6 months, you write them on the empty back of the previous week's one-on-one notes. And then you could quickly go through and see when you were coaching somebody because they're only on the back of the previous week's form.
Right. Well, and you also don't have to take two notebooks or somehow distinguish because you're always, well, always is a slight exaggeration, but you're talking about coaching in your one-on-ones for the most part. And you'll learn more about that in the coaching podcast. But if you're going to talk about them in the same meeting, why not have them in the same location?
Exactly. Yep.
But if you use a normal way and your notes are all mixed up between what's a one-on-one note and what's a coaching note, and you can't distinguish between the two, it's going to be difficult to find those notes in the future. And something we highly advocate for here at Manager Tools is you as a manager not having to recreate the wheel. Something I've found useful, for example, I want to coach my direct on project management. Well, I might want to coach someone else on project management in the future. And if I had a way of deriving those notes out of the rest of the one-on-one notes, so they're less about the person, more about the, oh, this is like a really good brainstorming resource. We should use this again. Or, ooh, those deliverables were way too big. It went really poorly. Right. I have those notes and I can go back and I can find them and I can use them and I can make my future self have an easier time doing something I've already done.
Good. All right, so that's it for our detailed guidance on one-on-ones. Do you want to summarize or you want me to?
Sure. Yeah, no, I'll summarize.
Go.
So, folks, we've said this, we've come back to it multiple times, and we will never stop talking about one-on-ones. They are the single most powerful tool we've seen. And in 30 years of gathering data on over 750,000 managers all over the world on every continent except Antarctica, because penguins don't have management structures, we've tested many versions of one-on-ones with many different frequencies, different agendas, different topics. And the fastest way to build trust is to conduct scheduled weekly one-on-ones where the manager lets the direct go first and the manager takes notes.
Basically, that's a distillation of all that work and data. This guidance is that distillation. Woe be unto the manager who tries to lead without developing a trusting relationship with her directs.
That's absolutely it. Thank you, Mark. This was great.
Thank you, Sarah.
That's all for this week, folks, and that's all for this series. Join us again next time as we cover a brand new topic. Bye, everyone.